So, please tell me your full name.
Well, my name's Erna Claire Jensen. And my name Erna came from my dad's, quote, girlfriend in Denmark. They lived in the same apartment house. They were babies together, so then I got named after her. And anyway, I was...
You were born
I was
in
born in,
where?
Out in the country in Dawson County, Nebraska, close to Cozad, out on the farm.
Yeah.
And
your parents, what were their names?
Okay, my parents were Peter Earhart and Marie Frederica.
Yeah.
And my mother's parents, I've just been talking about my dad's parents. My mother's parents, my grandfather came to the United States in 1869, and he spent 10 years in Dwight, Illinois, where he did a number of things. He worked in the steel mills, and he worked for a woman who was widowed on a farm, and she insisted that he go to school to learn English so that he knew English. And then he came, the weather is so wet there, Dwight, Illinois, and so he came out west and homesteaded in 1879, and then he homesteaded a quarter section, 160 acres, and tree claimed 160 acres. And then, he went, after he had his claims proven up, then he went back to Denmark to visit his parents. Mm-hmm. And there's where he met my grandmother. And she worked on the same farm as her dad, no, as his dad did.
Okay.
And so then she had saved enough money that she could come to the United States. And so she came to the United States and came with him. And she worked in Lexington, Nebraska,
mm-hmm.
for different people as a housekeeper, maid. And then she got a job with the Leflang family, and she worked there for 3 years, 3 months, and 3 weeks. And then she and my grandfather had set their wedding date. And so then the woman wanted her to work another, you know, 3 days, but no, they had it set. So they got married, and then at first they had just a little tiny, small house. He had lived in a sod hut, and then they had a house built, and then anyway, then at the same time, then my grandfather's sister and her husband came. And they bought the quarter section that was adjacent to my grandfather's farm. And then during that time, the church was being, you know, established. And so they belonged to the St. John's Lutheran Church. And anyway, so that's where my, you know, my mom and her sister and their two brothers, which were deceased early, they went to church there, and you know, everything. And I had an interesting experience when I was visiting in Denmark in 1972, that there was a couple who had lived out there at Cozad, and then they went back to Denmark, and they had been very good friends with my mom and her family. And she told about how my mom and my aunt would have them over for Sunday dinner after church almost every Sunday, because, well, I don't know, if they probably didn't go by the road yet, they probably just cut across the fields, because it would be about 3/4 of a mile over to the church from where my grandparents' buildings were. Well, what else can I say?
Well, you grew up on this farm.
Yeah, I grew up on the... I grew up... Okay. When my mom and dad got married, then by that time, my two uncles, my mother's brothers had died, and so it was just my mom and my aunt. And so then my mom sold her share of the farm, of the homestead, to my dad's brother, my uncle. And then they bought a farm across the road. And so that's where I grew up, on this farm. And we went to school at a one-room country school, which I think the education was just superior.
It was superior?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we lived 2 miles from church, and so that was, you know, like, well, for Sunday school, I think my dad probably hauled us all the time. I don't remember walking to Sunday school ever. But for Bible school in the summertime, we walked. And that was, our Bible schools were, well, we had 2 weeks. And we sang, and we had Bible study in the morning. The pastor that we had was Howard Christensen at the time, and he really did a good job of teaching us about, we didn't know it was Grundtvigian, you know, studies for life, but that's what it was, but we didn't know that. And anyway, he had this huge group of kids coming for Bible school, and they weren't all necessarily from our church. You know, it was neighborhood kids, others, yeah, too. And we had, so in the morning, well, we always sang, and then we probably had some, and then we had, little kids had their classes, and the big kids had our classes. And I was a fourth grader when he came. Up to that time, the former pastor, it was, I don't have any positive memories of his, but this was very good from Pastor Christensen. And then we sang a lot out of the World of Song, you know, sang so that we all know those songs, you know, when you start singing when you're 9 years old, you know, like the German Band and the Happy Plowman, you know, all those songs that we all like so well. And then in the afternoon, we had lunch. We always had it outside usually because it was nice weather. We could have a picnic outside. And then in the afternoon, we had more singing, and then we had crafts, and we had gymnastics. And then that, so we went from 9 till 3. That was a pretty full day. And it was so popular that kids, or even through confirmation class and driving cars, were still coming to Bible school.
Oh, yeah. That's quite something. You didn't call it Bible school, did you?
Summer school.
Yeah.
We called it summer school.
In Danish.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, we called it summer school, yeah.
Yeah.
But when my mom was a kid, they had 6 weeks of summer school, and then they studied Danish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
During that time.
But you didn't do, well, did you do that at all?
No, we didn't do that at
no.
all. No. Uh-uh. No. It was, but you know, like my parents spoke Danish all of the time. And I guess the older kids, my brother and sister, were speaking Danish. But then the summer I was...
You mean they spoke Danish at home?
At home,
yeah.
And when I was 2, starting to talk, my mom had a hired girl.
Yeah.
And her job was to primarily babysit me, and I came out in, she only spoke English, so I came out in English. And then if I didn't know a word in English, well, then I'd throw in the Danish word. Well, they thought that was so cute, and they'd laugh, oh, isn't that cute, and so forth. Well, I have this very stubborn personality, and that's the clock.
Okay.
And anyway, so then if I didn't know a word, then I would wait to use it till I figured out. I'd find another word to use. And so then, but see, you understand it so well because that's all that's spoken to you.
True.
And so anyway, so then when I started to school, I pretty much knew all the words. The last word I can remember not knowing that was the word for difference.
Mm-hmm. Difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the one. And how I learned that one day, some man had stopped to visit my father, and they were out there standing by the light pole talking, and he used the word difference. And I thought, oh, that's the one I needed. But I remember Mom telling about my brother went to school, and he was talking about that his dad fed Howard to the horses. The other boys said, well, you know, you don't feed, you know, they didn't know what he's talking about. Well, that's oats. And so you see there can be some hang-ups like that. But the, you know, this, our summer school, you know, that was really a great experience. And then later, well, we had different pastors and that continued on in the same pattern.
Yeah.
Howard, so go ahead.
After you, this is elementary school, you went on to high school.
Cozad High School.
Yeah. And
And then from there I went to Kearney. Well, at that time it was Nebraska State Teachers College at Kearney, Nebraska, mm-hmm. which is about 50 miles from home. Mm-hmm. And now it's part of the University of Nebraska system.
Mm-hmm.
And then after I finished there, then I...
Was that 2 years?
Four.
Okay.
Yeah, 4 years, yeah. Then I started teaching in high school.
Yeah.
And... I was 21, and my students, some of them were 19.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit young.
It is.
And so, but anyway, I survived, and they're still alive, too. I don't know of anybody that didn't survive it, but anyway, the first year I was teaching physics and geometry and beginning algebra and general math. I had five things,
mm-hmm.
physics, geometry, algebra, general math. Did I say geometry? I don't know. Well, anyway, mm-hmm. that was a pretty heavy schedule.
Oh, yeah.
And then the science building, well, the science rooms were being remodeled, so I had to do all that work, order new equipment, chemistry equipment primarily.
It's quite a job for a very young teacher.
Yeah, but fortunately at Kearney, I had worked in the chemistry lab for 2.5 years, so I had background from that, which was good. But then when I went to teach at Loops, I taught at Loop City, Nebraska, of which it was 2/3 Polish Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And you walk down the street, and these people, they were fourth generation, and they're still speaking Polish. And here, you know, those of us whose dads and parents had come from Denmark, we couldn't even speak fluent Danish. So that's a difference between the nationalities. And then, well, I taught there 4 years, and then I thought, oh, there's got to be an easier way of life than this. So then I moved to I got a job in my hometown, Cozad, and mm-hmm. I taught there 4 years. Then I went back to
high school,
and there I taught straight math.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then after that, well, then I went back to school for a year, and then I got a job in a community college in down in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And then that community college had problems, and so. There were 15 of us new that year, and 23 of us left. And
that's a bad record.
And that was most of the staff.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, then I heard from Torvald and Johanna that the math teacher here at Grandview had left. And that's how.
You knew Torvald and Johanna.
Oh yeah, must I've known that. Oh, he was our pastor.
Yeah.
See, it was. Okay, Howard Christensen, and then Torvald, and then Charles Terrell, and then Torvald and then Johanna and Torvald. Yeah, they came when I was in college.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, I've known them for a long time.
Oh yeah, sure. So they told you about
the job at Grand.
Grandview.
Yeah, and so then I applied for it, and anyway, so I got it. And so then I've been here ever since. And then I always lived in apartments that were close to within a mile. Because I had, when I was in high school, when I was just a ninth grader, we got caught in a blizzard outside of Cozad, my brother and I, and another boy. And our parents didn't know where we were for several days because the telephone lines were out, and they didn't know. All they'd been able to find out is that we had left for home.
Where were you then?
Well, what we were, where were we? At first, we were this, where we got stuck was right across the road from a house that was willing to take us in. Then we heard a tractor coming down, and they pulled us out, and we went back into town, and I stayed with a girlfriend, and my brother stayed with a friend.
But you could not tell.
No, because the lines were, telephone lines were down.
Too bad.
So I always said I've got to live close to work,
yeah,
which I did. And then eventually, well, one was a mile north of Grandview and the other one was a mile south. And then I bought my house, which was a mile to the south. Actually, it was 1.0 miles from the inside of my garage to where I parked north side of the science building.
Okay.
That was a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
That saved a lot of, you know, time.
Oh, yeah.
Because it only took me like 5 minutes from the inside of my kitchen to the inside of my office. And my office was office was in the on the back hallway of the science building, right by the loading dock door.
What year did you start at Grandview?
Okay, I came in 1966.
Yeah. What kind of student enrollment was, how big was it then? Do you remember that?
Well, yeah, I remember that. It was quite large.
Yeah.
It hit 1,600. And then, but then, see, there are two things that happened. The draft went off, so that the boys didn't have to go to school to keep from going to the Army. And the other thing that happened was that the Des Moines Area Community College opened, and they opened out north of town. And we all thought they were just going to be a, you know, a technical school, teach electrician or, you know, auto mechanics. But they taught full-fledged liberal arts program. And you can imagine the cost of a community college versus the cost of a private school. Well, then see, that really affected Grandview. So our enrollment dropped down. I really don't know how low it dropped down, maybe into the 700s. And then we started going to the 3-year programs and then 4-year programs when we got the nursing program first. And that's the one that Marvin Jessen wrote the program. First it wasn't accepted, and then he wrote it again. And it was accepted, and then we got accreditation from the necessary people.
Yeah.
And then, well now, well see, that was 1976 was the first, when the first 4-year program, nursing started.
The Danish background of Grandview College is, of course, dating way back to 1896,
yeah,
when it was started. And how was that background to be seen when you started at Grandview?
Well, Dr. Ernest Nielsen was president of Grandview. Have you heard his name mentioned?
I have.
Okay. Well, so he was very Danish, but as far as it was just a nice, comfortable place to work, and there wasn't a lot of you know, everybody knew it had a Danish background, but there wasn't, well, then, you know, like they had Studenterfest in the spring and Christmas programs, and but there wasn't a lot of Danish.
Specific Danish.
No.
But among faculty members, like Ernest Nielsen and yourself, how many of the faculty would be of Danish background?
Well, okay,
so just
Marv Jessen in the science division, and there just weren't a lot. I've got all my old catalogs back here. I could go grab one of those. Is that be all right? And they'd give you, you know, a good idea.
Yeah.
Because I can't think of very many. Names in it. And so here's one from 1972, which is not long after I came.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, Thorvald Hansen, Heidi Haugard. That's two, myself, Marvin Jessen. Okay, one, two, three, four. Ron Maygard, he was administration, that's five. Wilbur Williamson. Six.
But it's a small minority, actually.
Very small, right. Okay, but
the rest of them would be faculty members of every background. Almost.
Of every background, right.
Yeah. Maybe they would be predominantly Lutheran, or not so.
They weren't, they were not predominantly Lutheran. They were from all over the pattern.
Okay. Well, that's fine.
But anyway, in 2001, when I retired, mm-hmm. I was the last, at that time, I was the last person that was full-blooded Danish.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rudy Jensen, who I'm sure he's still teaching,
mm-hmm.
but he's half Danish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You've probably mm-hmm. met him.
No, I didn't.
But there's not, well, first of all, you know, the need, you have to be able to hire instructors, and
mm-hmm.
you've got to get someone who has the credentials to teach.
Of course, sure.
And
so among the faculty, this situation is quite obvious. What about the student enrollment? They were also, the Danish background was also a minority at that point.
That's right.
In the 60s.
Then eventually, see, we used to have a folk dancing team,
mm-hmm.
and then Karen Basin, who she's Swedish background. She's
mm-hmm.
but anyway, she ran that,
mm-hmm.
and then that was no longer popular. And then we also had a very very good gymnastics, yeah,
like in Denmark, I think.
Very what?
Like in Denmark in the 60s, you know, these kind of old fashioned traditions.
They disappeared.
They were not popular.
No, and see, then
for a number of years.
The gymnastics team got canceled.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'd had a wonderful gymnastics team. In fact,
mm-hmm.
the coach went from Grandview down to be coach at University of Missouri.
What kind of gymnastics would that be? So traditional with
the traditional.
With the jump over the
yeah.
fence and all that, what we call a horse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the traditional.
Yeah. And the women would do these, this kind of gymnastics with music, and they would sort of be in the line.
I don't remember that. I don't remember that they were with so much with music. I think they were the traditional things.
Yeah. Okay.
Like they have, like the kinds that they participate with. You know, like at the universities, the
mm-hmm.
gymnastics squad.
So
that
went out, and gradually you got these more all-American sports like baseball and basketball and
well,
what
they
you
had,
have now.
They already had baseball and basketball.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was, they always had those.
Okay.
And then golf. And then, but now they've got everything. Now
yeah,
this is the third year for football.
I bought this Grandview Reader.
Uh-huh.
And there was a list of all these athletic things that were added on during the years. And now you have the whole palette.
Yeah, that now I think they've got everything now.
I think so. So you have to, if you're a college or university in America, you have to have a lot of sports. Well, you seem to have a lot of sports. Is that a necessity to have a?
Is it necessary
of interest
to have?
Well,
it seems like that if you don't have it, the kids don't come.
That's the impression I was having.
And there's, you know, many of the, and then, you know, they come and then they get some scholarships and so
mm-hmm.
forth. And if you,
mm-hmm.
you know, we had girls basketball and boys basketball. And all the time I was there, that sure, there's always been girls basketball. But
yeah,
now
sure.
there's yeah. everything.
So the time you've been at Grandview, it hasn't really had much Danish or Grundtvigian background at all. You cannot say that.
Well, I'd say that it was run like a school for life, and that was his philosophy. But as far as, you know, the...
So you'll say the Grundtvigian heritage or the Grundtvigian tradition was present without being called Grundtvigian.
Yeah. That's the feeling I have. And
okay.
See, that's the way I grew up. I wasn't even familiar with his name until actually I came here. But, you
mm-hmm.
know, it was then, well, that was the way we were reared. But
cool.
we didn't know it.
No. You're not aware of that?
No.
So it was in the everyday life.
It was everyday life, right.
Fine.
And
okay.
it was, well... well, like when I went to confirmation class, we had this Pastor Christensen that I mentioned before. He was the pastor. Well, we didn't memorize the small catechism. We didn't even talk about the small catechism. We had a book that was called The Story of the Bible,
mm-hmm.
and then. You know, I always went to Sunday school and went through confirmation class and stuff, but I'd never heard of the small catechism until I was walking across campus one day with the academic dean, Ron Taylor, who's retired now.
Mm-hmm.
This is his second year of retirement. Well, anyway, he's not been retired very long. And I told him, I said, don't try to make a Norwegian Lutheran out of me. and then we were, you know, he's talking about that. And well, I hadn't even been aware of it because of the way, you know, it was a lifestyle, but nobody put any name to it. And my parents would talk about quite a bit about this split between the two groups of Danish Lutherans. But, you know, they didn't call it by any name, but they definitely were in favor of the Grundtvigian tradition. So that, you know, that was a, but you don't.
Were you aware of the ways and beings of the other group?
Yeah.
How they view things. Were you aware of that?
Yeah.
When you were younger.
Yeah. Well, I think I was aware of why there was the difference of the two groups. And
I mean, in like attitudes towards dancing and alcohol.
Oh yeah, we definitely.
We were aware that you sort of had an open opinion about these things, and there was this other Danish church and with congregations that were having a quite different attitude.
Yeah, well, see, some of my there was this family in our church that. Came to our church, but they weren't happy with our, you know, too much freedom, so they sent their kids to Dana College.
Hmm.
And there was one that was the same age as my sister. Well, but she was a free spirit, but anyway. So it was a, but, you know, like the things at Grandview, well, it operates a nice, smooth program, and, well, right now, they're very fortunate. They've got a very strong leader. Kent Henning's very strong. And even though, you know, well, he's not Danish, but I keep teasing him about, well, Henning's a very common name in Denmark. Are you sure you're not?
Good.
And his, well, he had an experience coming in there that some of us were not too much different in age from his parents when, you know, when he first came. Mm-hmm. And then there's been a lot of retirement. Mm-hmm. But it's, the school has, either it was going to grow or it was going to die.
Mm-hmm. And it's thriving now.
And it's thriving now, yeah.
You've been to the Tyler Folk Meeting this summer. What brought you there?
What brought me there? Oh, well, I was working, and then they'd all, Torvald and Johanna and a whole bunch of others from, you know, Luther Memorial Church would talk about, oh, they had so much fun, you know, going there and what was going on. Well, I couldn't go because it was the same time as opening faculty meetings. So I couldn't go. But then as soon as I retired, then I started going.
That was in
2001.
Yeah.
So I've gone every year since then.
And you've obviously been enjoying it.
Oh, yeah. And it's not a lot different than from way our, you know, our summer school. Very similar, except for it's for grown-ups. Mm-hmm. It's not that
good
much
point.
Different.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, you know, it's very good, and mm-hmm. and the committee, well, the older people turned it over to the younger people, and you saw, you know, Ricky Bly doesn't look very old, but she's retired from teaching, but she doesn't look that old. But
she certainly doesn't.
No, she doesn't. Mm-hmm. But they just do such an excellent job of getting a variety of interesting programs. And I think that sometimes people come there from other, they've grown up in other Lutheran churches, and I think they're, you know, somewhat startled because it's so contrary to how they were reared.
You have experienced people from elsewhere.
Yeah, I've gotten acquainted with some people. Two guys, I met them because one of them was on the museum board the same time I was. Mm-hmm. So I got acquainted with them, and it was, it wasn't exactly what they had expected.
No? How did they like it?
Well, they liked it, but they liked it and everything, but it wasn't, you know, like, okay, you know, this is so different than anything I've ever experienced.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot like the elder hostels, I would think, except that there's probably no devotions involved.
Mm-hmm.
As you, when you were there, you know, we had devotions once a day, and but it's all very low key.
Absolutely.
And it's comfortable. I would think that for any person, no matter what religion or non-religion, they would not be uncomfortable.
So, you see, outsiders would appreciate it, but maybe the question is that outsiders would never get the idea of going there.
Well,
not
unless, only if some of their friends say, you know, I'm going to this, you know, like, why don't you go along?
If they can persuade them, because I've heard several people telling about when they, either before they go or when they go back, tell their friends and neighbors about this meeting they've been at, they wouldn't hardly sort of get the idea. Well, what you're singing, you're dancing, and for 5 days, and they think it's fine, but they sort of think it's a little weird, a little strange. But
maybe, you know, it might seem that way, but you know, for me, it's just something that's very, very comfortable. Because it's, well, it's not like I said, it's not a lot different than what our summer school ran.
And I also say, if you go there, you would experience it as a very comfortable and very good community spirit, and so you would feel at home there.
It's
like I did from being a first timer. No problem at all.
Did you fly into Omaha and
and
then John Mark picked you up?
I was I rented a car and then I went up myself because I knew John Mark was going to be would be going back just Thursday, which he did. So I had to have my own car. But it was easy to be a part of the whole thing from day one. So I felt.
The thing is that, you know, these people come from all over the United States plus other places. And
What do you appreciate most at the fall meeting?
What do I appreciate the most? I can't say which thing's the greatest. The food's always good. The singing's always good, wonderful. The programs are always excellent. The devotions, you know, you can't really compare devotions to programs, but they always have good ones there. And
absolutely.
It's interesting how, you know, some people will come to give devotions and they've not experienced this group before, and they're really astonished by the group. I mean, you know, that's a lot of people that just come out of the woodwork. Would that happen in, I don't know. Would it happen all over? I don't know.
No.
Now, our church women at Luther Memorial, we have a yearly retreat, and this will be our 41st retreat, and it's very, very similar to the fall. We have programs and we have devotions, and well, we don't do any dancing, but that everything else is pretty much the same. We sing.
Does it take place here in Des Moines?
Yeah. There's a, well, we're having it, what, the 17th and 18th of September. And we've been doing this for 41 years without a break. And for a small congregation to have, we usually have around 20 some people come.
It's for 1 day?
No, 2 days.
Okay. Where does it take place?
Where does it take place?
Yeah.
Right there. Well, we have it at the Fellowship Hall in the church.
Oh, yeah.
And then we eat some of our meals out at the cafeteria at Grandview. So that way we, you know, the people that are in charge don't have to fix food.
Oh, yeah.
Unless they want to. Now, sometimes they come up with ideas that they want to try something, and then they do. But we have a different committee every year, which is important that to get new ideas, to have a different committee. And it's been going on now. This will be our 41st one. And the highest attendance we ever had was, we used to have it at Episcopal Center at Boone, Iowa, which is about an hour drive north of here. And then that camp got sold, and then we had it different places, and we ended up just having it at the church, which works well because everybody's getting older, and it's easier to go home at night.
Sure.
But we really have, when you have 20-some or more women participating, it's good.
Yeah.
And it's very...
I haven't heard about that before you told me just now.
Nobody's mentioned our church women's retreat?
No.
Oh. No, it's... it'll be
You have quite a number of different activities and...
Yeah, we have... it just depends upon what the committee comes up with. We have speakers. Like last year, one of the speakers we had was somebody from the Wildlife Department for the state, and she brought in live owls and showed us things with little things like that. That's the program that I remember the most from last year. But we have all kinds of programs. And sometimes we have somebody from the college speak. And, so then, just all kinds of programs, but
sure.
It's good. And it's very similar in pattern to the fall meeting.
Yeah. So it's kind of the same spirit that is sort of around the all the activities. I think I'll get to my maybe final question is, would you consider yourself being a Green Vegan?
Well, I think I was reared that way and not knowing it. That's the way I feel about it.
Sort of when you're, after you become an adult, you become more acquainted with the old man, Grundtvig from Denmark, and sort of realize, well, I know about that. Is that where you realize sort of Grundtvigian heritage in one way?
Well, we didn't have anything formal about it, and my parents didn't use, his name or anything, but it was just it was a way of life that's different. And I think
you were aware of that you had things in your group that would be different from maybe other groups in your neighborhood.
Well, our neighborhood was, this, all of our neighbors, everybody to the west of us primarily, we were all of Danish descent. And so we went to the same church and, in the country school, it was a mixture. But probably half and half, maybe more than that, of Danish background. Then my high school graduating class, there were 49 of us, and 7 of us were members of our church. And it would have been more than that, but a couple boys dropped out and joined the Navy. So I think that, we grew up with this way of life and doing things, and it's like we were being trained to run a decent lifestyle, but we didn't have a lot of things that were forbidden.
No.
And so I think that made a difference.
It was, as you used the word, it was low key, sort of down to earth kind of teaching, learning.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've been coming around quite a few number of
things,
subjects, so I think I'll stop.